Let him worry about Vesta? Harbin thought sourly. And what do I do about supplies? Where do I get fuel and food for my crew? How do I get all the way over to Ceres on what's left in my propellant tanks? I've stripped the ship's armor, too. What if I run into an astro attack vessel? Grigor can give orders, but carrying them out is up to me.
Doug Stavanger was also feeling frustrated about the long time lag between Selene and the Belt. Edith, aboard Elsinore, was approaching Ceres. She would be arriving at the Chrysalis habitat in less than 24 hours. So it turns out that if you'd stayed here, he was saying to her, you'd have had a big story at your doorstep. Humphreys isn't letting any news media into his home, not even inside his garden, or what's left of it. But from what the safety inspectors tell me, the house is a burned-out shell, and that big, beautiful garden of his is almost completely destroyed. He hesitated, leaned back in his recliner, and tried to group his thoughts coherently. It was difficult speaking to a blank screen. It was like talking to yourself. Edie, this war has gone far enough. I've got to do something to stop it. They're fighting here in Selene now, and I can't permit that. If that fire had spread beyond Humphrey's garden, it could have killed a lot of people here. Everyone, maybe, if we couldn't get it under control. I can't let them pose that kind of a threat to us. I've got to stop them. Yes, Stavanger told himself. You've got to stop them. But how? How can you stop two of the most powerful corporations in the solar system from turning Selene into a battleground?
When his message arrived at Elsinore, Edith Elgin saw the concern, the deep lines of apprehension creasing her husband's handsome face. But in her mind, a voice was exulting. Fuchs is heading here! He has to be! He has friends among the rock rats. One way or another, he's going to sneak back to Ceres, at least long enough to refuel and restock his ship, and I'll be there to interview him. She was so excited that she hopped up from the chair she'd been sitting in to view her husband's message and left her cabin, heading up the narrow passageway toward the bridge. I've got to find out exactly when we dock at Chrysalis, she told herself, and see if the captain can spot any other ships heading toward the habitat. Fuchs may be running silent, but his ship will show up on radar, now that we're clear of the radiation cloud.
Lars Fuchs was indeed heading for Ceres, running silently, all beacons and telemetry turned off. Hands clasped behind his back, mouth turned down in a sullen scowl, he paced back and forth across the bridge of the Halsey, his mind churning. The ship was running smoothly enough for its first flight in deep space. Its systems were automated enough so that the four of them could run it as a skeleton crew. Nodon's shoulder was healing, and Sanja had assured Fuchs that there were more crewmen waiting for them at Chrysalis. Fuchs was officially exiled from the Rock Rat's habitat, and had been for nearly 10 years. But they'll let me take up a parking orbit, he thought, just for a day or so, just long enough to take on more crew and supplies. Then what? He asked himself. I have Nautilus waiting for me in the belt. And now this new ship. Can I find enough people to crew them both? Humphreys will be coming after me with everything he's got. Fuchs nodded to himself. Let him. Let him chase me all through the belt. I'll bleed him dry. I failed to kill him, but I can hurt him where the pain is greatest. In his ledger sheets. Every ship he sends after me is an expense that drains his profits. Every HSS ship that I destroy, they'll pour more red ink on him. I'll bleed him dry. Until he kills me. Fuchs realized. This war between us can end in only one way. I'm a dead man. He told me that, years ago. He caught a glimpse of himself reflected in one of the blank screens on the bridge. A bitter, angry face, with a thin slash of sneering lips and deep-set eyes that burned like hot coals. "All right," he said to his image. "He'll kill me. But it will cost him plenty. I won't go easily. Or cheaply."
Big George Ambrose was fidgeting uncomfortably at the conference table. His chair was just a tad too small for his bulk, its arms just high enough to force him to hunch his shoulders slightly. After a couple of hours, it got painful. And this meeting had been going on for more than a couple of hours. The governing board of Chrysalis was having one of its rare disagreements. Usually, the board was little more than a rubber stamp for George's decisions. None of the board members really wanted any responsibility. They were all picked at random by the Habitat's personnel computer and required to serve a year on the governing body. Each of the 8 men and women wanted to be back at their jobs or at home or taking in a video or at the pub, anywhere but stuck in this conference room wrangling. George thought the pub was a good idea. "Maybe we should have our fucking meetings there," he said to himself. "Get 'em all half blind and then take a vote." But this was a serious issue, he knew. It had to be faced squarely and soberly. Pancho had warned George that Lars Fuchs was in a spacecraft heading for the belt. It didn't take a genius to realize that he'd have to get supplies from somewhere, and Ceres was the only somewhere there was. "He might not come here at all," said one of the board members, an edgy-looking woman in a high-mode pullover that sported more cutouts than material. "He might just hijack a ship or two and steal the supplies he needs. He's a pirate, after all." "That's why we exiled him in the first place," said the bland-looking warehouse operator sitting next to her.
"That's not entirely true," George pointed out.
"But we did exile him," the warehouse man retorted, "so we don't have to allow him to dock here." "That all happened 10 years ago," said one of the older board members, a former miner who had started a new career as an armaments repairman.
"But he was exiled for life, wasn't he?"
"Right," George admitted. "So there." The woman sitting directly across from George, a plumpish redhead with startling violet eyes, said, "Listen, half the HSS ships in the belt are going to be looking for Fuchs. If he puts in here, they'll grab him."
"This is neutral territory," George said. "Everybody knows that. We've established it with HSS and Astro. We service any ship that comes to us, and they don't do any fighting within 1,000 clicks of our habitat."
"That doesn't mean we have to service Fuchs. He's in exile, remember?"
"There's something else involved," George added. "We have a news media star heading here. She'll arrive tomorrow. Edith Elgin."
"I've watched her shows from Cellini. Isn't she married to Douglas Stavanger? What's she coming here for?"
"To do a documentary about the war," George explained.
"Do we want to have a documentary about the war? I mean, won't that be bad publicity for us?" "She'll want to interview Fuchs, I bet. That would be a great way to get everybody's attention. An interview with the notorious pirate. It'll make us look like a den of thieves. Can we stop her?" All 8 of them looked to George. Surprised at this turn, George said,
"We'd have a hell of a time shooing her away. She's got a right to report the news."
"That doesn't mean we have to help her. Let her interview Fuchs somewhere else."
But George was thinking, "Humphrey's people are smart enough to watch her and wait for Fuchs to show up. Wherever she interviews Fuchs is going to be fucking dangerous for both of them."
Asteroid Vesta. An individual nanomachine is like an individual ant, mindless but unceasingly active. Its blindly endless activity is of little consequence by itself. Even the most tireless exertions of a device no bigger than a virus can be nothing but invisibly minuscule in the human scale of things. But while an individual ant can achieve little and has not enough brain to accomplish more than instinctual actions, an ant colony of many millions of blindly scurrying units can strip a forest, build a city, act with a purposefulness that seems little short of human intelligence. So it is with nanomachines. An individual unit can accomplish little. But strew millions of those virus-sized units over a restricted area, and they can build,
or destroy on a scale